Support for WYPR comes from University of Maryland Medical System, where world-class doctors are pioneering immunotherapy that's helping to stop cancer in its tracks. And with screenings and advanced treatments across the state, it's cancer care made for Marylanders. Learn more at umms.org/cancer.
I am so lucky. This place is beautiful. It's on the water. Look at the skyline.
We're a pretty self-mobilizing family. We'll get there somehow.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Stoop Storytelling Series podcast. I'm Laura Wexler.
And I'm Jessica Henkin.
This week on the podcast, Bike More, two stories about people who choose to pedal through Charm City.
So this first storyteller is Juan Carlos. He's an attorney and just one of the most earnest, endearing individuals that I've had the pleasure to meet through the process of just working with them to tell a story for The Stoop. So take a listen.
How are you doing, everyone? My name is Juan Carlos. I am an immigrant from Mexico. I'm a DACA recipient. I'm a lawyer, and I am the chair of the board of Bike More. So thank you, everyone, for coming. Thank you for supporting us. Above all, I'm someone that loves Baltimore so much, and it's irrational how much I love the city. So I want to tell you guys a few stories that, like, they're going to tie together and just tell you guys why I love this place so much. So I moved here when I was 12, immigrated from Mexico, and I remember one of the first memories I have coming here. My dad and my mom were like, we need to go to Baltimore City to the bank, and we live in, like, Racerstown, and I'm like, we don't have a car, but whatever, we're just going to do it. It was like, well, why do we have to go so far? It was like, it's the only bank with Spanish-speaking staff. So we take the bus to the Owens Mills subway station, and we take the subway to the top of Broadway. We walk down all the way down to Fells, at the Bank of America is still there. And we run our errands, and then my dad's like, let's walk around the harbor. And then we take a walk around the whole harbor, and I remember thinking, wow, I am so lucky. This place is beautiful. It's on the water. Look at the skyline. And also, we got here without a car. Like, the transport, like, do I live in the most advanced city in the world? and that's, my love just, like, grew from there. And I, growing up, like, we didn't have a car. To middle high school, we just got around with the buses. And I thought, like, I was so lucky. I'm like, this is amazing. Like, this is, like, the best. And I talk about Baltimore this way still to my friends, and a lot of times people chuckle at me, right? And they're like, what transportation? Like, what are you talking about? This place is like, it's not. And I still think of it that way, because it's like this city and this country, in a way, have, like, giving me a place to dream, become, and be who I am. And I fucking love it. So then I... Growing up, that love never stopped, right? And I was in high school. Baltimore County High School is very diverse, and people are dreaming of going to L.A., going to New York City, and I truly wanted to live in Baltimore City. My mom would vouch for that. And I remember, I wasn't dreaming just in theory. Like, I would see myself, because my mom cleans houses, and I would clean houses with her. And there's very specific houses I remember. One in, like, Federal Hill on the park that overlooks the water, and another one across the street. And I would look at these houses and, like, I'm gonna live here. I want to live this. I want to walk around the harbor. I want to, like, live here. And my parents, to their credit, they always told me, like, yes, of course, honey. You keep dreaming. And, like... Looking back, it's like, why did they leave me dream so much? Like, arguably, that was unattainable for this, like, undocumented immigrant kid that, like, barely knew any English. And so I went through high school, and you know, in 2012, the DACA program got started by Obama, right? And I was just so lucky that I was, like, at that red age where those dreams were like, oh, wait, I can go to college. I can get a job. I can go to law school. I can do all these things. And I feel like I never stopped dreaming. I never got, like, never had that gap where I was, like, able to stop. So I just kept going. I was like, holy shit, I'm living the dream. And I moved to South Baltimore. I'm going to college. And when DACA came, it was like, it was great. I had a work permit. I had all these things. But it also came with this maze of bureaucracy that you get a work permit every 2 years. Your driver's license is tied to the work permit, and there's renewal delays. And the first time the renewal delay came, I didn't have a driver's license. Couldn't get to school, couldn't get to work. And I remember talking to my parents, and they were like, well, what are you going to do? I was like, I don't know, I'm going to buy a bike. And I'm going to go to school, and I'm going to keep going to work, because I was still just so happy that I could do these things. So I bought a bike at Joe's Bike Shop, and it was a mountain bike, and I was like, I'm going to do this. And I did it, and I felt so lucky, and I felt so... I still, like, I was in this maze bureaucracy, but I was still, like, I was like, I can work and go to college. I still can live this dream. And I remember one of my commutes, I live in South Baltimore, went to night school, University of Baltimore, and I'm, like, coming down St. Paul, and everyone that's biked in Baltimore, you get down St. Paul, and you get to that intersection with Center Street, and it's like, how do you want to die tonight? You want to go under the bridge where cars use it as a freeway, or... are you in the wrong gear? You're not going to make it up that hill, and a bus is going to pass you really close. But I feel so lucky about it, and I was so thankful that I could do it, and I convinced myself that that was my new identity, and that's what I wanted to do. I wasn't forcing to do it, that's what I wanted to do. And it wasn't until, like, 2017, I couldn't find the exact date. Maryland Avenue Cycle Track opens. I'm in law school at University of Baltimore, and I lived in, like, southern Mount Vernon, and I remember the first time I hopped into it, and you ride up the bike lane, and you're like, holy shit, this is so safe, where has this been my whole life? And you're like, it literally, like, it felt like it was made for me, right? Because, like, law school's right there, and you get on it, and my apartment was, like, right off of it, and for the first time, I felt like, I was like, wow, the city saw me and was like, this is for you. This is yours. I felt like I was in heaven. But then it took me down this rabbit hole about, why don't we have more of this? Why is this all we have? Why is it so hard to get this? Who is against this? And going down the rabbit hole is Alpha Bike More and the bike community in general. And I was just like, yeah, I found more people like me that want better, and we still love Baltimore. We think it's perfect, but we want better. We want more of it, right? And it's one thing I want you all to know out of this is, like, it's not, bike lanes are not just for your $3,000 bike spandex, like, hipster. It's for people like me, people who I was, who just want to get around. And yeah, that's it. Thank you.
God, there's so many good things about that story. But I think the thing that I love is his unwavering love for Baltimore that he had had ever since he was a child. Like, and that his dream was to live in Baltimore City. I mean, it's just great. It's wonderful. And he's like unapologetically in love with the city.
We're going to take a quick break before our next story.
So this next storyteller is Janice Campbell. She is an acupuncturist, former stage manager, and wife, mother, artist, just a real Renaissance person. And so this is the story that she shared about how her family made the shift from being a car family to a bike family. Take a listen.
So have any of you been sitting in your car and listening to NPR or a podcast or talking to a friend about the state of the world, and suddenly everything begins to feel a whole lot smaller and constrictive and overwhelming, and you can't figure out what to do because everything seems to have a butterfly effect? Remember that part. Okay, back to the beginning. We moved here from Minneapolis, Minnesota, where we had lived for 12 years and where we had walked practically everywhere, biked some, and had to go out every 2 weeks to check and make sure our car still ran. Yes, even in the wintertime, it's all about clothing choice. So we moved to Baltimore, and within the first 2 weeks of moving to Baltimore, our bikes get stolen. Welcome to Baltimore. Now, honestly, it would have been no big deal if they took them off the street, but they took them off of a second-story porch. I would have been impressed if I had not been so pissed off about it. So, obviously, that combined with the fact that we had moved here for me to go to acupuncture school in Columbia, and we became car-dependent very quickly. At this point, I should probably mention that I am directionally impaired. I'm the kind of person that gives directions like, go to the funny looking tree, hang a right, then go to where the Burger King used to be and turn left, and then go to the blue house and make a U-turn. Now, if you cut down the tree or you build something at the Burger King that is a completely different shape and size, or you repaint the house, I have no idea where I am. Luckily, I'm married to someone who carries maps in his head, and you can drop him down in the middle of the Gobi Desert, and he will be back for lunch bringing takeout for everybody. Thank God for cell phones. I would still be wandering somewhere in Howard County. So, time passes. I'm graduating with my master's degree. I'm 40 years old. I'm about to start my second career, and in our infinite wisdom, we decide to have a child. And so this same kid, at 2 years old, insists on walking all the way from our, well, where our home was then in Highland Town, to the Inner Harbor. I am not a bad parent. I took the stroller with us the first three times. Then I gave up. He's 19 now, and he still insists on walking everywhere and refuses to get a driver's license. I am telling you all this because we're a pretty self-mobilizing family. We'll get there somehow. This brings us to the July that I was driving him to a PT appointment downtown, and I ran our zippy little Mazda 2 through a very large puddle, and it stalled. And then it made funny noises. And then I had a chat with it, and we talked it over, and I got it running again. And it wasn't until 2 days later that it started to smoke. What had happened in that puddle, I'll get to the bike part, I promise. What happened in that puddle was that it had hydrolocked the engine, thrown a rod, punched a hole in the side of the engine, and had still managed to continue running on three pistons for 2 days. It was that good a car. So good that when we bought it used with like 150,000 miles on it, our mechanic invited all the other mechanics to come over and ooh and ah at it. So it's paid for. Everything but the engine is still the amazing car that it had been. So we're like, okay, we'll replace the engine. So we go looking for a used engine. There was not a single engine, used engine in that make and model in the entire United States. But by the way, do y'all know that there are only three companies that are in charge of all the junkyards in the entire country? Three. Anyway, who knew? You learn things. So then we're like, okay, great. We'll get a new engine. It'll still be cheaper than buying a new car. Well, we're just about to do that, and we find out that there's not an insurance company in the country that will insure it for anything but collision because it is technically totaled, no matter what my mechanic said. So at that point, we sit down and decide to have a chat about how much we really need a car and whether how much we used it anyway, and we decided to run an experiment. We were going to run a nine-month experiment from July until whatever 9 months after that is, sometime in the early spring, and we'd just see how it went. So we took the payout from the insurance company. We bought two e-bikes, because only two of us seemed to leave the house at the same time, and besides, the manling is walking all the time. And we begin our experiment. This July, we will have intentionally been without a car for 2 years. And yes, it's great financially. No insurance, no car payment, no gas, none of that. No easy pass. And it's good exercise-wise, because even with an e-bike, you can make it work. You can make yourself work. You get a choice. So if I'm going to work and I don't want to arrive like a sweaty mess, I can put all the things up to the top numbers. Otherwise, you know, it's still good exercise. But that's not why I like biking. Here are the three reasons I really like biking. One, the medicine I practice is deeply ingrained and informed by how the seasons move inside of us and outside of us. And biking embeds me into the micro changes in the seasons all year round. It's making me a better practitioner. And I am not only walking my talk, I am biking my talk. The second thing is that I have conversations with people I otherwise would never talk to. Like the woman at the grocery store who wants to talk to me while I'm trying to figure out how to fit all the groceries in like a Jenga that you can't see in bags on the side of the bike. And she ends up in this like 20-minute conversation with me about everything. Or the person at the red light who rolls down their window to talk to me about my bike and ask me about where I got it and how I compared it with other bikes. And da, da, da. Or the one that rolls down their window to worry about me because I have gray hair and I'm on a bike. Thank you. I'm close. I'm almost there. And the third one, which is the most important, is that biking, the amount, I'm very aware of how big the planet is. Biking shows me how much, the distance that I cover reminds me of how much room there is on this globe. And I'm very aware of how big the sky is. And I'm very aware that we are all part of this organism that is floating here in space. And what that also tells me is that we have all that room for change, and we have all that capacity to create the world that we want to create and the one we want to live in. How cool is that?
So you guys are partially a bike family now, aren't you?
Well, I would say yes. I would say that Aaron is a bike.
Her husband, Aaron.
Single. Yes, my husband has purchased for his birthday, I got him rather, an e-bike, which I realized after I saw him taking off
into a dumpster.
No, he rides like a gazelle. He's very graceful. But I was like, oh, he likes it because it's like the lowrider bicycles that the Beastie Boys all love. Like it's kind of got this interesting overlay with hip hop culture that I was like, oh, that's what's going
now,
on there.
Can he do like? Can he do wheelies and stuff?
No, he can't do any tricks. Well, at least I haven't witnessed them. But even if he did them, they would be lost on me. We've been married for too long. He needs to do that in front of some young gals who will giggle and smile and toss their hair. I have very little hair now that I'm in perimenopause.
Oh, good Lord. All right. So thank you for joining us today for our stories of these bikers. You can visit us at stoopstorytelling.com to learn more about what we do and the shows we present. We want to thank Maureen Harvey for producing the show, and we will be back soon with more stories from the Stoop.